This year, as the holiday approached, I kept thinking of the concept of a birthday for the world. A birthday for the world. You'll see tomorrow, we keep repeating, this is the day of the world's birth. It's not like Shabbat, where we celebrate God's rest after creation. We try to find our way into that divine rest after the 6 days of work. No, here we celebrate creation itself, the labor of it, the expense of energy, the world's actual emergence, its birth. And I always say, the blast of the shofar opens the space of the birth of the world. But I teach philosophy, and philosophy teachers are usually melancholy, you know that. So I have to remind you of a melancholy fact about birthdays. The fact is, if you were born, if you had to be born, you can die. Whatever comes to be can pass away. You're actually there. You're there right now in the space you occupy. So your existence must always have been possible. But you weren't always there. So reality can do without you. And it did for a long time. And that's also true of the world. If the world has a birthday, and it does because here we are celebrating it. If the world has a birthday, it was not always there. Reality can do without our world. Reality is more than our world. Don't ask me what it is. I don't know that. I only know that it's more. It's more than our world and can do without our world. Our world came to be and can pass away. So we can't take it for granted. Celebrating the world's birth means perhaps this most of all. Not taking the world for granted. Everyone who knows me knows that I am not an athletic person. I am, in fact, a rather clumsy person, but I do go to the gym fairly regularly. And I've got to the age when, every time I lift a heavy weight above my head, I say, metaphorically speaking, I say, thank you, Lord, that I still have the energy, the strength to do these things, because I'm old enough to see that it doesn't belong to me by right. An accident or an illness might have taken it away long ago. An age will take it away. Time will take it. But I'm happy now, really happy that I can do these things. The now matters, and matters to me more and more. And I feel the same way about the world. It was born. It was born. It must have been born since today is Rosh Hashanah, the world's birthday. But what had to be born can die. The world is very old. We can discuss how old, and we can do research and carbon dating and all those things. But what's crucial is this, that the world is old enough to have produced creatures like ourselves, human creatures, capable of not only living, but watching ourselves live and aiming at more. And striving and repenting, creatures so powerful that we can destroy the world. when the world gave birth to us, its death may have come a lot closer. This is so obvious, I'm surprised I don't think about it on every Rosh Hashanah, but this is really the first time I've taken it in. Of course, for 200,000 years, human beings roamed the planet and didn't cause too much trouble. I know it was 200,000 years because I asked Siri. As we were driving to Jack's, she told me, 200,000 years. For 200,000 years, humans roamed the planet and didn't cause too much trouble. We didn't have the strength, we didn't have the power to cause trouble, real trouble. But in my parents' generation, it's that recent, my parents' generation, humans gained the strength to cause the death of the world. Oh, maybe some bugs would survive even if we did our worst, but everything we call the world, the living world, would be gone. Such a recent thing. Some of you may remember the change. You may be old enough to remember the change. For so many years, the world was safe, and now a single stupid politician could destroy the world. Some president somewhere, some industrialist, some terrorist. A single careless or cruel person could destroy the world. A single event could destroy the world makes us one, makes the human race one for the first time. We're all one because we all hang by a single thread. But I remember on September 11th, we were all in Washington, D.C., and after all those awful things, the Pentagon struck a few miles away, the Twin Towers struck in New York, we took our 7-year-old to the playground, and we were all on the swings in Rock Creek Park. And the twilight and the trees and the lawns were so beautiful. It was all threatened that night, but it was still there and so beautiful. I may have told this story to you 13 years ago, right here. It's a cliche. It's a cliche, I know that. But it's not really a cliche. It's really a technique for meditation, a technique for meditation. To see the wonder of the world's birth, you must sense its possible death, its possible loss. Death is the mother of beauty, says the poet Wallace Stevens. Death is the mother of beauty. That's true too. It means when you understand the world could die, you grasp at that moment the beauty of its birth. Now listen, there's no political problem we can't solve, but the trouble is human perversity. Why did ISIS, the ISIS crowd, murder those journalists so gruesomely and send us the hideous videos? Everyone knows the answer. They did it to attract the people who hate us, and also to draw us into the conflict. In short, to make things bloodier, to make the destruction more intense. Whatever the ISIS crowd says, whatever pretext they give, it's just the destructive impulse. It's resentment desiring destruction. If you're not proud of yourself, if you're not proud of your recent history, you just vote no. No to life, no to the world. And we call this nihilism. The ISIS crowd is the most extreme example, but it's an exemplary, it's an exemplary badness. And we all find a little of it in ourselves, every nation, every culture, every person. Freud called it the death wish. The death wish. Freud says there's plenty of love in us, and above all, a love of life, that there should always be more life, more life. This is God's promise to Abraham. More life, there should be more life, but there is also in us a death wish, a love of destruction for the sake of destruction, a love of death because life is so much trouble. Only a genius like Freud, a Jewish genius, could say something like this. There's a death wish in all of us simply because life is troublesome. But we have to choose life because the trouble is worth it. Life and death are set before you, as it says in Deuteronomy. Life and death are set before you that you might choose life. Freud says, life is so much trouble, death tempts us collectively down to our very cells. And we find all sorts of excuses for our destructiveness, but collectively we should choose life. I'll tell you something more about Freud. He understood that nations had to fight sometimes, and that people also had to work and didn't always like it, and that the world couldn't gratify everyone's desire. Disappointment, he says, it's unavoidable, but things are a lot worse than they need to be. This is one of Freud's central ideas, maybe the most important. Things are worse than they need to be. There's more repression than we need. There's more pain. There's more death. There's less joy. And why would we make things less joyous, more painful than they have to be? Freud thought about it. He thought about it. And he found finally, it's just the irreducible destruction, destructiveness in us, down to our very cells. Again, Freud asks, why do people behave so perversely? Why is it that a man who has a good relationship with a woman will destroy it almost on purpose and then do the same thing in the same way again and again? Freud says, it's just destructiveness. There's no further explanation, an irreducible destructiveness. And why is it that a woman who likes her job and has a perfectly decent boss will quarrel with the boss and lose her job and do the same thing in the same way over and over again? Freud says, look, it's just destructiveness. We can analyze things, we can look at dreams, we can connect one event to another in somebody's life, but finally, it seems there's an irreducible destructiveness in us. And why do people have recurrent nightmares, the same nightmare over and over again? Freud says it's that same destructive impulse, almost impersonal, working in our minds, tormenting us. And again, the ultimate reason for the destructiveness, Freud says, he thought about this a lot. He didn't want to say this. He didn't like this. But the ultimate reason is that life is trouble and we resent it. The beauty in it wins our love, but the inconvenience of it, and life is inconvenient, makes us wish it away down to our very cells. But we shouldn't, Deuteronomy tells us, we should choose life. And that's why there is, and there should be, and there must be a celebration of the world's birthday. The world rises before us. Let's welcome the world the way we welcome newborn children and grandchildren, or the way the bridegroom welcomes the bride. You can't cut out the destructive impulse, but you can rectify it through love of life, by welcoming life and more life. Jewish mystics used to say that even the devil would find his proper place, his proper place where the devil would become fruitful in creation if only we loved life enough. And life is so good, even if it's troublesome, how can we not love it? So many of you have thought about these things and have thought about them, I'm sure, far more deeply than I have. We all think about these things. These things that we know are always in the background in every political conversation, in every family quarrel, in every lover's quarrel, in every war. Life is troublesome, and this evokes a destructive rage and makes everything worse than it has to be. And the oldest among us here remember when we gain so much power that our destructiveness threatened all. So you know what I'm going to say. This is the world's birthday, and we wish the world many happy returns. The world gave us birth and nurtured us, even though we could spell death for the world. That was generous of the world, the world's maternal generosity. And it's important that we wish the world well.